The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
People talk about climate. I think jobs. Within our climate response lies an extraordinary engine of job creation and economic opportunity ready to be fired up. That's why I've proposed a huge investment in American infrastructure and American innovation to tap the economic opportunity that climate change presents our workers and our communities, especially those too often that have left out and left behind. I want to build a critical infrastructure to produce and deploy clean technology, both those we can harness today and those that we'll invent tomorrow.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back and good afternoon. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew Mariani today, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. The audio you just heard was from President Biden on climate, on his new climate initiative. This is the new policy that he is pursuing. He was meeting today on a conference call with other world leaders, trying to hammer out a new agreement to reduce greenhouse gases and carbon emissions. Joining us to discuss this new initiative, what it means, what it does, and how does it fit in with Catholic theology, Bill Patenaude works in environmental management and has a Master of Arts in Theology. Since 2004, he's been writing Catholic Ecology for the Rhode Island Catholic. He also writes about Catholicism and social commentary for local and national publications, including Catholic World Report and Ignatius Insights. He's the author of the science fiction novel A Printer's Choice, which you can find at aprinterschoice.com. And word has it, he is writing a sequel to that right as we speak. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ed, yeah, I'm taking a couple of minutes break just for my sequel writing to come on the show.
I was going to say,
thanks for having me. This is a great topic.
I thank you very much for being here. And I was going to say, well, maybe not right as we're talking with you, because that would be difficult. But it's great to have you on here. And this is a tricky subject. Obviously, as Catholics, we are called to be good stewards of the earth and of the environment, and there is definitely a Catholic ecology, if you will, or a theological treatment of ecology here. We've seen it. We've seen Pope Francis speak about this, but it's not just Pope Francis. You know, Pope John Paul II, Pope Benedict XVI, they spoke about the stewardship of the earth's resources and environment as well. So this is something that Catholics need to be involved in, and we need to be able to take a look at this and see, does it meet the standards of good policy? Does it do what it's supposed to do? Does it do more damage than it resolves? And will it work? I mean, these are all the types of things that should go into our thinking when we see proposals like the one that President Biden is putting forward.
Well, that's correct. The real question is, why are Catholics called to be engaged in it? And you touched on one. It's a moral imperative. It's part of our faith from Genesis. We know that God created the world good and orderly. We're meant to be part of that continued creation. The incarnation itself is Jesus Christ, the Word of God, entering creation for the salvation of humanity and of all creation. So there's a theological and moral underpinning to all of this, and that's certainly what John Paul II and Benedict XVI and Pope Francis are discussing. But there's another reason, and I hate to be to bring it down a level, but it's strategic. I mean, we need to be in this conversation. The church needs to be in this environmental conversation, because it's going to happen whether we're there or not. We need to bring the gospel to it. We need to baptize it. We need to bring the gospel of life and to use it as an opportunity to evangelize. Otherwise, other voices will seize control of it, and in many ways already have. So we really need to be in this conversation.
And I couldn't agree with you more, Bill. And I would say that that's true of all the different issues that we face And that's one of the reasons why, you know, Drew does such a great job of putting this show together that really focuses on current events from a Catholic perspective. And I'm fortunate enough here to fill in for him occasionally when he's taking a day off or when I've convinced him to go someplace so I can take his microphone away from him. But, you know, but this is the reason why we're engaged in these issues. This is certainly one of those areas. And I think it's important because the tendency in environmentalism, I think, is for increasingly radical proposals that accrue power into fewer and fewer hands, right? Where you don't really have any subsidiarity at all in these. There aren't any opportunities for people to localize the way that they approach these things. And climate change, I think, is a specific risk for this because it is an issue that's global in nature and tends to take agency away from individuals, local communities, and regional political structures, which is where you, as a Catholic, you really would like to see solutions being implemented because there's the greatest accountability for it.
Amen. And the I couldn't. That's absolutely right. In fact, I just wrote a piece for Ave Explores for Ave Maria Press on the role of government and environmental protection as part of, you know, the whole Earth Day week. And that's pretty much my point, which is that the role of government, and I speak as a 32-year government regulator with, you know, who looks at all of these ecological issues now through the eyes of the Catholic faith. The role of government needs to be to inspire people to do the right thing, to be informed, to make good decisions, and then to, on their own, in their family. And it really all comes down to the family. And that's one of the great crises that the left is, in my opinion, is imposing upon civilization, is the breakdown of the family. But it is actually in the family that we learn to be good environmentalists, that we learn to be good stewards of creation, that we learn to love thy neighbor and to make good moral prudential decisions. When we talk about climate change, the climate that I would like to see changed is sort of the ideological warfare that's going on, because there are real moral issues at play about what the choices we're making and how they're impacting the environment. And that's, again, why the church needs to be part of it. So we shouldn't shy away from it. And I think sometimes many of my Catholic brothers and sisters shy away from it because it's highly technical, it's highly scientific, it's highly political. But we need to be there because we bring the truth. We bring the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that gospel has to be everywhere.
Right. And I think that's, again, it's a great way to look at this. We need to provide the moral framework for the discussions and the solutions that we are actually discussing. So let's again, we're talking with Bill Patnode and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let's take a look at President Biden's proposals. Now, we don't have, I don't know that we really have a full proposal. What we've got is we've got some outlines of what President Biden wants to do. He wants to cut greenhouse gas emissions by, 50% over the next 8 years. He wants to boost alternative energy production. He wants, and in doing so, he's saying that we're going to create lots of new jobs. We actually heard the same thing about 12 years ago from Barack Obama and Joe Biden as part of their stimulus plan in 2009. It didn't really pan out. That doesn't necessarily mean it won't this time around either, though. I don't want to be too dismissive of this, but this is something that we've heard before, and it's always right around the corner, and it remains right around the corner to this day. What do you see in here that's different? What do you see in here that's more of the same?
I see most of it as more of the same in terms of the language, in terms of the types of proposal. What's different now is, or not so much different, but what is more advanced now is the private sector has really moved well beyond where they were a decade ago. They're moving into what is called, you know, quote-unquote, green economy. They're investing in renewable energy. They're moving away from fossil fuels. So the private sector is really doing this, and for good reason. I mean, another element of the private sector is the insurance industry, and they're the ones who are really some of the loudest voices about why we need to address the climate issue. And that's who convinced me. I was a bit of a scientific climate skeptic from, you know, I don't know what, 10 years ago or so. And then I went to a talk, and it was a fellow mechanical engineer from a large insurance company that does research. And he was saying we need to do something because of the cost that's going to be associated. So the insurance industry is not known for their you know, they're caring for the common good, and they're looking at the bottom line. And so I took away from that maybe this is real. And that's, and you hear that more and more. The insurance industry is really, really worried and concerned about this. So yeah, we do have to do something about it. It's these prudential decisions that the church isn't necessarily going to engage in. But as a lay person, as, you know, we have to be part of the specific process. And so what is being proposed is not all that different. In fact, when I listened to the quote you played at the introduction, that could have been written, you know, 10 years ago. That could have been written 20 years ago. But what's changed is the private sector. So in that sense, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, it will be interesting to see how this plays out. And I, you know, again, innovation is great. We didn't really see a tremendous amount of it based on the investment that we put into it 12 years ago. But that, again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it won't happen now. There are some trade-offs here that I'm going to ask Bill about in just a moment. We're talking with Bill Patnode. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149. Let's go to Sacramento and bring Lillian into the conversation. Lillian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. My question to Bill is, our Pope Francis, it seems like his goal is to aid the environment and the world and everyone. Where so I'm trying, and he seems to be leading the issue. So a lot of our secular people, that's one reason why they like him. So where does he fit in this? In the subject that you were talking about?
Well, that's a great question, Lillian. Thank you very much. He has not been shy about sharing his voice on that. He's also not been shy on sharing his voice on some things that, the popular culture doesn't find so palatable too. I mean, he's a very interesting figure in this, but he has been outspoken on the environment, Bill. And, how influential do you think he has been in this?
Within the church, I would say probably not as influential as some would like. Certainly outside of the church, I think the point that was made that, you know, people point to him from the side of the world and they think he's a great guy. And until he talks about marriage or abortion or something like that, then they don't want to hear it. Pope Francis is building off the legacy of John Paul II and Benedict XVI when it comes to environmental issues. Let's not forget that John Paul II mentioned ecology and environmental protection in a very robust way in his first encyclical, Redemptor Hominis, an encyclical about Jesus Christ himself, and he mentioned environmental protection in it. That's because of the link between the incarnation and the salvation of the human race and all of creation, and Jesus Christ. So there's this that link makes environmental protection something that we need to be part of. So what Pope Francis is doing is he's doing exactly at what you and I were just talking about. He's inserting the church squarely into the conversation for both the moral reasons, but also to guide the conversation and to baptize the conversation. And in that respect, that's going to be a slow process. But in that respect, he is making a difference. And I'll give you just a real example of how this works. So I am with my secular environmentalists who may be pro-abortion. And we're concerned about mercury pollution in the atmosphere and the water and what
yes.
mercury does to human life, especially the unborn. So when my secular friends who may be pro-abortion are raising the alarm about mercury pollution, they're being inconsistent if they're also supporting abortion. So I can then have the conversation with them about, gee, don't you think that you need to rethink your position on abortion if you're so concerned about mercury? So I have found in the many I've engaged as a Catholic in the environmental movement, it provides so many opportunities to have these conversations, which really are moments of evangelization. So that's exactly what Pope Francis is doing, and he's in it for the long haul, and frankly, so is the Church.
And let's go to Warren in Maryland next. Warren, welcome to the conversation.
Well, thank you very much. I just enjoyed the radio station so much. That's the first thing.
Thank
I'm
you.
Say. And I'm a new Catholic. Kind of a new Catholic. I was actually born Christian, baptized Catholic, and 40 years later, I'm coming back to my faith. So,
well, God bless you. Welcome back.
Thank you. And with that, I want to say, with regard to man-made climate change, I'll just qualify that I have advanced degrees in aerospace and mechanical engineering, and have been in the science and engineering field for a number of years, 40 years. I also pay attention to this, and I look at data, and I look at science, and the most credible information I've seen on this entire issue comes from a climatologist. His name is Joe Bastardi. He graduated from Penn State, and he has his own company, Weatherbell. And you need to read that. Read him. And quite frankly, the whole premise behind the idea that man-made global warming, the thing that they call the climate gases or whatever, they're talking about carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is not a pollutant. It's not a poison. It's a natural gas. If you do some basic physics, you also understand that carbon dioxide does not raise and float up high into the atmosphere. It doesn't do that because it's heavier than the other elements that we have in the atmosphere, like oxygen, for example, or nitrogen, which really make up most of the atmosphere. And their whole premise is just nonsense. It doesn't follow any science that man has anything to do with the emission of gases that would cause the climate to change. And I encourage you very much, go read Joe Bastardi. Go look at real data. Look at physics. Look at the chemistry of it. Their whole premise will just fall apart. And I'd be happy to argue with anybody that you could put on. And we could start with basic chemistry and basic physics that most people learn in the first and second year of college.
Warren, we're going to have to leave it at that because I want to get back to our guest. But thank you very much for your call. Very well spoken, very well put, and welcome back too. It's great to hear that you're back with in the church, and God bless you on your journey. Bill, I mean, obviously there's still a lot of controversy over the conclusions that people are reaching on this, and you mentioned that you had a moment of clarity with because the insurance companies are taking this very seriously. I'm going to put this in two tracks. One is that, first off, it's still very controversial. People are still insisting that this is not actually an anthropogenic issue, that this is just cyclical warming that we're experiencing right now, and it's far too short of a time frame. The second is that a lot of what we're talking about in terms of emissions, even if you don't look at the carbon dioxide part of it, there are particulate emissions that we should be doing better on anyway, some of which would necessarily address some of those other issues.
Actually, three things. One, first, Warren and I, the caller and I, have apparently a lot in common because I'm a mechanical engineer and I had been away from the church for 20 years or so and came back in 1999. I was delighted to hear him say that. So I echo what you said, Ed. Welcome back, Warren. So the controversy that I would be engaged in discussing is one that I discuss often, is what are the models projecting, and you know, what does this mean? No one has a crystal ball. No one knows exactly what's going to happen. However, what I would take issue with is that one of the beautiful things about creation, about the creation of this planet, it has a metallic core which provides a magnetic field which keeps solar radiation out of here, and it deadly solar radiation, and it has carbon dioxide in the atmosphere which helps keep the atmosphere warm enough for life. And because of that, we're able to live. So carbon dioxide is very much it's like a blanket in the atmosphere. It does help the atmosphere retain heat. You add more of it, which we're doing, the concern is obviously we're going to increase the way the atmosphere distributes thermal energy and moisture. And that's what's got people concerned. And that's why the insurance company is concerned and the military is so concerned. The question that I think we do need to have is, well, what does that mean in terms of 20 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now? What should we be doing? And that's the conversation that involves prudential elements that we as lay people can be involved in, but the church necessarily isn't going to have a position on.
Right. And in to my point, there are issues about other types of other types of environmental issues, which might be being solved by transitioning to different energy sources, but those involve trade-offs as well. For instance, if you want to get to a fully electrical existence where you have no fossil fuels but you're running everything off of electricity, you still have to generate the electricity. And you have to find reliable ways to do that. And that process also has environmental impacts as well, because you have to be doing a lot of mining for rare earth elements and that sort of thing. And that creates environmental damage. The disposal of batteries is a whole other issue. This is a whole systems issue. We're about 30 seconds out. I'm going to go ahead and just let you have the last word here, Bill. Sorry about that.
No, and it's the point that this is why the church needs to be part of the conversation, because we live in a fallen world. There is no perfect answer, because ultimately what we have to be as Catholics is be there when there's suffering in the world to help our brother and sister. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It would go on for hours.
Bill Patton, we're going to have to leave it at that. You can find out more at aprinterschoice.com. I'm Ed Morrissey. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today and taking your calls at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Hey, it's a Friday afternoon, and we're about ready to head out and enjoy our weekends. And that means it's time to take a look at what's on tap for entertainment this weekend. And one of the big stories, of course, is going to be the Oscars. We're going to be talking about that with Christian Toto in just a moment. But before we do that, just want to remind you that the Cale Clark Show comes on at the top of the hour. Topics today are, was Shakespeare Catholic? Today, he died this day in 1616. So that's going to be a trivia thing that you can take with you. And also, a near-death experience caused this person to change his priorities and it went viral. That's coming up at the Cale Clark Show, 5 p.m. Central Time, right after we're done here. So be sure to stay tuned for that. But now, I'm pleased to introduce again my friend Christian Toto, a film critic who started out at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, moved on to the Washington Times, and then when he saw the real leftward lurch that Hollywood was going in, he started his own website featuring his own reviews called Hollywood in Toto. You can find the reviews at hollywoodintoto.com. Not just reviews, but plenty of news from Hollywood and the entertainment industry. Christian, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
What an interesting next few days we're going to have in the entertainment industry. The Oscars are going to be on Sunday night, I believe it is. Yep. And it might feature, I don't know, one or two movies that people have actually seen. The Oscars this year.
You're being too kind.
I think I might be being too kind. I mean, did anybody watch any of the films that are nominated for awards this year?
You know, the irony is that a lot of the films available for the biggest awards are streaming right now in different platforms. And I think that they, maybe generally speaking, are more available for viewers now than in a typical year because of the pandemic and the fact that Netflix and Hulu are getting, you know, more engaged in this, you know, Oscar season. But I keep reading new polls that say, gosh, people don't recognize these titles. They're not really familiar with them. It's just, you know, it's listen, part of this is not Hollywood's fault. The pandemic year just threw everything, you know, out the window as far as tradition. But people don't know these movies, and that's going to be a real problem when it comes to the ratings, I think.
Well, and this is not an event that has been generating really good ratings for a very long time. In fact, it seems like every year they set a new record for low audience participation, right? I mean, this is this used to be a real, you know, cultural watershed moment every year. It wasn't the Super Bowl, but it was something that, you know, a lot of people are interested in the movies. A lot of people are fans of the movies, and they would tune in because they wanted to see their celebrities. They wanted to see who won. And it just seems like over the last 20 years or so, people have lost interest, perhaps because the movies that they're celebrating and the causes they're celebrating just simply don't resonate with hardly anybody left in the American public.
Yeah, listen, there are a lot of legitimate reasons why this is happening. It is the rise of television, where all these great TV shows kind of get our attention, the sure. Game of Thrones, things like that. And I think, you know, movies don't often do that these days, you know. There is the fact that the films they're choosing for Best Picture nominees are more obscure, more art house. They don't have that mainstream mass appeal. It is the fact that the awards shows themselves are hyper-political in one direction only. And also, they can't even get a comedian to host the night. You know, in a traditional year, you have a Jon Stewart, you got Billy Crystal, maybe Johnny Carson. These people were funny, they could think on their feet, and they could make a dull moment suddenly exciting and funny and goofy, or they could make something profound, or they can, you know, they're meant to ad lib. It's what this night really needs. Instead, you've got a 3+ hour ceremony that's full of smug politics that just doesn't really crank up the entertainment. And, you know, and also this isn't, you know, 20, 30 years ago. We see these celebrities all the time. They're on talk shows. They're on the late night circuit. They're on websites. They're on webcams. They're on Zoom calls. The sort of the glamour and the aura of being a celebrity, just it ain't what it used to be. And that's, again, it's just part of the culture.
We're speaking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. He's on Twitter, by the way, at HollywoodandToto. Taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You actually had a really great piece up, I think it was yesterday, at HollywoodandToto.com called 7 Causes You Won't Hear Championed During the Oscars. And you do lead off with what you're going to get, which is Progressive Lectures, a show that in the best case scenario wraps up after 3 grueling hours, and a new ratings low. Now, I think that you are going to probably not see any of these. There might be even a couple things that you didn't include on here that you won't see. But tell us a little bit what we're not going to hear in the Oscars ceremony this year.
Well, the kids in cages phrase, and obviously it refers to a very terrible situation at the border.
Terrible,
where,
yeah.
You know, there's so many kids there. You know, some are smuggled, some are, you know, brought over by coyotes. Lots of different reasons. Very complex. But what we heard for the past 4 years was that particular problem was all Trump's fault. It made Trump Hitler-esque, and all these horrible rhetorical flourishes about the situation. And now, you know, it's just as bad, if not worse. But it's President Biden, and Hollywood loves President Biden because he's a Democrat. So you can't mention that. So it's just one example. Also, Chinese censorship has become such an issue, not even just the censorship, the concentration camps that the nation is running. I mean, we know about this, and you would think that the industry, which wants to speak truth to power and be this moral arbiter for the world, you think they care, but they won't, because they really need that Chinese theatrical money to keep some of their careers afloat. It's really depressing when you think about it, because if they were well-intentioned and they had their best instincts at heart, you know, I could sort of forgive the fact that they don't agree with my ideology, but the fact they leave so many really critical causes out and then they hit other causes which are purely partisan, it doesn't make them look good, honestly.
Well, it doesn't make them look good, and again, it doesn't really engage the audience as it is, right? I mean, I've stopped watching the Oscars about 15 years ago just because it just got to be so unbalanced and frankly out of touch with where I was as a movie viewer, that it just didn't make any sense to watch these things. And it used to drive my wife nuts anyway. I'd turn it on and she'd find some place in the house to be and loudly say, "I don't understand why you're doing this." And finally, one year it was like, "Yeah, you know what? You're right. I don't understand why I'm doing this either. So let's not do this anymore." But that's sort of true about the movies. And I think we're seeing that more than ever this year. And I think what we're seeing here is a really strange bifurcation in Hollywood, in filmmaking especially. It's not as true on the streaming services, but it is true in the movie theaters, or where the movie theaters would be if we had movie theaters, which is that you get two different products, right? You either get the really super mass entertainment, you know, comic book movie genre sort of thing, or, you know, action movie sort of thing that you have to get $300 million at the box office to make up the budget, or you get, as you mentioned, these really obscure art house films, which have no, which very few people watch except for the people in Hollywood. So really making those films are really made for Hollywood itself, for the people in Hollywood. The rest of it's made for everybody else, and they don't get any respect, but you know, again, they're kind of formulaic. There used to be, prior to this, a much more robust middle there, right? Where you had entertaining films that had artistic value. You know, Tootsie comes to mind, for instance. I'm trying to think of, you know, Oscar winners from the past. You know, Silence of the Lambs, I guess, in its own way, right? It's a genre film. It's extremely well made. It's very entertaining. It keeps you on the edge of your seat, but it has interesting things to say as well. And I don't know that you have that anymore. And I think that the Oscars this year especially really show just how much of a divide there is. Almost this sort of like, you know, two categories of films. The films that nobody watches, the films that everybody else watches. I mean, it's crazy.
That's harsh, but true. One of the more intriguing voices in recent weeks has been Bill Maher. You know, he's sort of he's certainly a progressive late night talk show host, but he's been sort of defying the liberal groupthink in some of his commentaries. And he kind of tweaked the Oscars recently, saying they're so depressing, they're dull. It's like, you know, kind of taking your medicine. And of course, the people in Hollywood, you know, didn't take that too well. But he does have a point. I mean, listen, there's always a place for sober-minded films that illustrate tough issues in our culture. But there's also a place for joy and for celebration and for rebirth and for, you know, uplifting tales. And, you know, one movie that actually came to mind recently was The King's Speech, which is not that old. But that one actually did well at the box office. It did have that sort of Oscar feel to it. But it was uplifting and hopeful, and it had an arc to it, which I think really resonated with a lot of people. And we are missing those. And I think Hollywood just doesn't really know how to make them anymore. It's very, like, they know how to make the art house. They know how to make the Godzilla versus Kong Part 12. Great. But there's no movie in the middle that kind of reaches out to a lot of people, that kind of talks to our commonality. They're kind of clueless in that regard.
Well, again, I think if you are a comic book fan, you are living in a golden age, right? Because you've got the Marvel Universe, you've got the DC Universe, you've got other types of others in those genres, and they're really well made. They're really well made films. You may not like them all. I read your review of Wonder Woman 84, for instance, and clearly that didn't make it. But I mean, the first Wonder Woman was a good film. It was an entertaining film. They're really well made. They're not cheesy films. These are, a lot of resources go into these. You know, you've got the Snyder cut of Justice League. It's 4 hours long, right? I mean, it's even got that sort of art house mentality to it. But what you don't really have is, again, that blend of you know, something that will appeal to larger audiences, but really has something to say that really is, that isn't a comic book thing, that doesn't have superpowers and people, you know, aiming beams at each other for the grand finale sort of thing. And I kind of miss those types of films. I am finding some of those films though on, you know, Amazon Prime, on Netflix, and some of the other platforms that are doing these types of films and taking those kind of risks to bridge that gap. And I think Hollywood's really missing out. And that's the reason why you don't have that, that type of attachment to the Oscars anymore.
Yeah, listen, we're switching. This was happening before the pandemic, where the streaming platforms were creating very good films, films that were, you'd see them in a theater in any other generation, but now they're at home. And that just makes the Oscars smaller. It doesn't seem as special. You don't go to the theater. They're not big movie stars. They're just the people you see on the small screen. And, you know, our small screens are better and they're flat screens and they look great, but it just, there's something magical that's missing. And I think that Hollywood has done a poor job of sort of marketing movie going as something wonderful and all American. And I think they're paying the price for that.
So, I mean, the question is, has TV, I mean, and bear in mind that this is all Hollywood. I mean, it's different providers, of course, and different distribution channels. It's all the same entertainment industry. But has TV really surpassed the cinema now in terms of quality entertainment? Not just in terms of quantity, which, you know, clearly is easier to shovel out on TV and streaming, but in terms of actual quality, has it surpassed Hollywood?
I think it's equaled what you see in a movie theater. I mean, if you think about the biggest movie stars around, almost all of them will do with HBO movie or a Netflix movie or a Hulu movie. There's no reticence to kind of go there. And if you look at these movies that are made for these platforms, the budgets are massive. The Irishman was the Scorsese film from a year or two ago. It was well over $100 million, and I think that's getting more common. So these big streaming companies will make a product that looks exactly what you see in a theater, but you don't see it in a theater. So you see it at home. And again, I think the Oscars is all about glamour and romance and the mystique that comes around the Hollywood, you know, the theatrical model. And for a variety of reasons, that's fading. And I think the Oscars are fading too.
And again, I think that that's part of the reason why, but part of it is just that the Oscar, it's a terrible show. It's a terrible show. I mean, it's
an awful show.
It is an awful show. I mean, it's just that nobody really wants to address that. We're talking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. You know what? I want to take a quick break now here, Christian. The reason why is because I want to spend some time on movies that might be coming out this weekend. If you want to avoid the Oscar ceremony, and I think both of us would highly recommend that you do. Maybe there's some other stuff out there that we should be watching. You've got a couple recommendations, or at least a couple films that you're taking a look at HollywoodandToto.com. I've got a film to propose to you. And we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. We're talking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 47 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We're talking to my friend Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. He's also on Twitter at HollywoodandToto. And we've got done talking about the Oscars and the problems in the industry. Let's talk a little bit more about what might be out there to watch, Christian. And before you and I throw out our suggestions, we're going to take a caller here. Andy from Fort Myers, Florida, calling into the show. Andy, what do you got on your mind?
Hi there. I want to recommend two movies that I was pleasantly surprised to discover. I'm not a big movie goer, but I discovered a great movie on Tubi. I believe it came out in 2014, and the name of the movie was Night Train to Lisbon. It starred Jeremy Irons, and I would give that a 10+. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it a 10+. I wanted to get your guest reaction to that movie, and then I have one other.
Well, okay, let's go with Night Train to Lisbon. I haven't seen it. Christian, have you seen that one?
You know, I haven't, but I do want to really too quickly mention, I just discovered Tubi. It's a streaming platform where you don't have to pay for it, and they have modest commercials. And I think it's a great deal because they've got a large array of titles, and the commercial load is not that bad. You know, usually when you sit through a movie with commercials, you're like, oh, you forget what movie you're watching. They go on so long.
Right.
But I've been happily surprised with that platform. So I haven't seen the movie, but I do like Tubi.
All right. So Night Train to Lisbon is the first one. What's your second one, Andy?
Second one I saw on Crackle. And this one, the movie came out in 2020. And it's called Blood and Money. And it starred Tom Berenger. And none of these movies, by the way, have gratuitous sex or violence in them. But they were really well done. And I highly recommend both of them. The first one, like I said, I think was one of the best movies I've ever seen in my life, and I'm a senior.
All right, Night Train to Lisbon and Blood and Money. I like Tom Berenger, too, so I'm a fan of Tom Berenger. So that's good to know. Andy, thank you very much for that phone call. Yeah, Blood and Money I hadn't heard of. So that's Tom Berenger he's been around a long time. He did I think the first movie I ever saw him in was The Big Chill, and that was almost 40 years ago.
Yeah, he's a good actor. And our caller pointed something interesting. You can find some very good movies in sort of out of the way places. You know, Crackle is not HBO, and Tubi is not Hulu. But these are newer platforms, and they share some good stuff. I mean, you have to be kind of careful. There's a lot of junk out there, sadly. But if you kind of weed through the garbage, you can find some really good movies that maybe people haven't heard enough about.
It's I know Crackle. And Tubi is kind of connected to actually my cable carrier has a Tubi connection. So if you are looking for a movie and it's on Tubi, it'll play it for you with the advertising. And I agree with you. It's the ad load isn't terribly bad on Tubi. So if you're looking for Night Train to Lisbon, there you should be able to find it. And Blood and Money is on Crackle. And so, yeah, those are the types of things that you want to be looking for if you are on a Roku box. Some of these things are their own channels on Roku boxes, and you can find some really interesting stuff going through there. And like Christian Toto says of HollywoodandToto.com, you can find an awful lot of junk in those things as well. So, all right. So, Christian, we're going to start with your recommends or non-recommends. I know that you've talked about a couple of films at HollywoodandToto.com recently. You talked about one in particular, a faith-based movie called Walking with Her, but it doesn't sound like you were entirely sold on that one. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's about an older gentleman played by Edward James Olmos who has lost his faith. He's suffered two personal losses that were significant, and he just thinks, how could a just God let this happen, which is a common refrain for sure. And then he is approached by God. He gets a bunch of messages saying that God has sort of a plan for him. He wants him to go through something. It's a golf tournament, and even though he's no longer playing golf competitively, all of a sudden this character is good, really good on the green. So I like the concept behind it. Actors are good. George Lopez is really starting to surprise me. I think he's getting really interesting as he gets older. I think he's getting a real good screen presence, but I really did not like this movie. There's just no tension there. It's just very over the top and sort of its storytelling chops. And it's certainly a faith friendly movie. It's got good actors in it. Its heart is in the right place, but I just didn't care for it.
Yeah, sometimes those things work, and sometimes they just don't. You know, that's and it might be that that some viewers might get more out of it. So now that you know that it's out there, of course, you're looking for Walking with Herb. What would you recommend this weekend? What's something new out there that you might recommend?
You know, there haven't been a lot of great new movies. This one is intriguing to me. I was born in '68, so I didn't see this live when it was happening. I was a little young. But Tiny Tim is a new documentary about Tiny Tim. Tiny Tim came for a day. And he was one of the more eccentric characters in all of pop culture. But it really is kind of a time capsule about how this larger man with a tiny ukulele how he kind of captured the public's imagination for a while. And he did it in the late 60s at a time where, you know, the culture was just on fire. It sounds like maybe what's happening right now. But here's this sort of oddball singer with this falsetto voice, and we were transfixed by him. So I found it fascinating. I feel like it doesn't give you enough information about Tiny Tim and his career and his music and his skills, but if you're kind of curious about that chapter in pop culture history, you could do far worse than renting a Tiny Tim King for a day.
I'm just old enough to remember who Tiny Tim was from when he was actually actually a thing, right? Actually a phenomenon. And yeah, I think he got married on Laugh-In, if I'm not mistaken. There was or the Johnny Carson show. I mean,
And drew huge ratings, by the way.
Yes.
That's a key part of the story.
Yes, it was on Carson. Yeah. So yes, mm-hmm. I mean, this goes way back. You know, I'm just a little bit older than you, Christian. So I actually do remember some of this from when it was happening. But yeah, he was quirky mm-hmm. is one way to put this. All right. So now I'm going to give you a film recommendation, and I'm going to give it to the audience. I have become, you know me, I see a really good film. I start becoming like an advocate for it, right? And I start talking about it on Twitter, and Christian follows me on Twitter, and he's probably already rolling his eyes. He knows which movie I'm going to be talking about, which is Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo. And you may not know the name Danny Trejo, but if you've watched films over the last 20 years or so, you know the face. This guy is one of the most dramatically bad-looking guys on screen. I mean, this guy, he has the face of a villain, and this documentary of his life, that's the way he started out. And this guy went through the prison system in California. He came out when he realized that he had this epiphany in prison, that his life was going in a completely bad direction. He was going to come to a bad end. And he got out of prison, got paroled, and decided that the way to change his life was to orient his life to doing things for other people. So he had all sorts of addictions. He cleaned those up. He started becoming a drug counselor, and it was becoming a drug counselor that got him into the pictures in the first place. He was called to the set of Runaway Train, with Eric Roberts and John Voight, because one of the actors in it was a recovering drug addict. And he says, there's coke all over the place out here. I really need you out here to help me stay straight. And when they saw him out there, you know, part of this is in a prison. They looked at him, hey, you want to earn some money as an extra? And I mean, this is a very funny thing that, you know, Danny Trejo is very funny in this. He says, as an extra what? He had no idea what they were asking him. I mean, he's a completely charming guy. And it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story of faith. It's an amazing story of redemption. And he keeps emphasizing this. I owe a debt. I owe a debt. And I don't think I'm ever going to be able to pay it back. But I'm trying. And it's just this amazingly inspirational and uplifting film. And I don't know that you've seen it yet, Christian. And so I'm going to ask you, first off, have you seen it? And secondly, what's your impression of it if you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it, but I was just thinking that would actually make a great movie. I know this is a documentary about his life, but wouldn't you like to see a mainstream movie about this particular actor, about his, you know, falling so hard and building himself up. And, you know, in recent years, I've read stories about him helping out the less fortunate and doing some charity work. And just like, boy, what a wonderful story. And, you know, I am very critical of Hollywood, and I think they often deserve it, the industry. But there are good people there. There are people who are doing the right thing, who are entertaining us, who are using their clout and their fame to help other people. And I am all A-okay with giving them a spotlight and saying, hey, more like Danny Trejo, because he is a character and he is fun to watch on screen, and it's just a remarkable story.
You know, it's a remarkable story, and it's actually one that they had to talk him into telling. But in this format, but he talks about this wherever he goes to talk to 12-step groups, you know, of that type, you know, not necessarily 12-step, but, you know, that type of, you know, support groups. He goes to schools and talks to kids about, you know, the importance of education and staying in school and not getting involved in this stuff in the first place. He goes to prisons repeatedly. He goes back to prisons to tell people, you can get out of this, but this is how you have to do it. And he can say that because he's been there. And so the film tells this story. And, you know, there's this cliche that my friends and I used to say, you know, we laughed, we cried, it became a part of us. You know, to talk about, you know, sort of like, yeah, whatever, you know, that's, you know, people talk about, yeah, I laughed, I cried, it became a part of me. Honestly, I laughed, I cried, it became a part of me. That's what this film does. And it, I mean, it really sticks with you. And if you're looking for a film about real redemption and real service, I mean, Inmate Number One, The Rise of Danny Trejo is an amazing film for that. So I'll let you have the last word. Christian, what are you going to do this weekend in 30 seconds or less, entertainment wise?
I'm going to grit my teeth and watch the Oscars, sadly.
Oh, no.
Good job. Entertainment-wise, I recently signed on for HBO Max for a month, so I may kind of check out what they have to offer. And if you like video games, as Mortal Kombat, the movie just came out. I did watch Godzilla vs. Kong, which was as dumb as advertised, but it had big monsters fighting big monsters, so it scratched my itch there. And I love to kind of look around the streaming platforms and see what I haven't seen. But
we got to leave it there. Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com. Thanks for being with us, folks.